So let me ask you something. Did you sell something today? Was it something that's going to change a patient's life, change a healthcare provider's life, change a hospital's outlook on a procedure or how they impact the community? Well, if the answer to any of this is yes, congratulations. And if the answer is no, there's plenty of time left to make a difference. The year is young, and you are here at the Medical Sales Guru Podcast. Hello, my name is Mace Haroff, and welcome to this week's edition of the Medical Sales Guru Podcast, the podcast for medical sales professionals. We are into the second week in January of 2017. And if you are listening to this sometime way afterwards, I assure you that the information you are about to hear is going to be relevant no matter what the time of the year. It will be evergreen. So hopefully you will listen, take it to heart, and most importantly, do something with it. Because just listening to these podcasts while you're driving or exercising means you're just listening to my voice. And if that's all you're doing, that's really wasting time listening to me. You could be doing something a lot more enjoyable. But this isn't about pleasure. At least it's not about the pleasure that you get from listening to this. It's about the skills and the thinking that you get from listening to this and, again, doing something with it. So if you've been listening to my podcasts or reading my content for any period of time, you know, one of the things I always talk about is resisting the urge to sell intuitively, because selling intuitively can really kill your business. So I'm going to drive that home so it makes sense. And this is whether you're new to medical sales, new in a territory, or if you've been doing it for a long time and you're still selling by focusing on products, which is how most reps sell intuitively. So let's put this all into perspective by talking about intuitive selling, or really intuition. Now, what the heck is intuition? You hear the term all the time, right? You know, do you have good intuition? Use your intuition. We've heard this from our parents. You might hear it from your sales manager. Well, what is intuition? Intuition is the ability to understand something immediately without the need for conscious reasoning. In other words, don't think about it. Just go by what your gut is telling you. And sometimes intuition is really, really good. I mean, very often it's good. It could help you to avoid dangerous situations. Like if you're walking in a dark parking lot and something doesn't feel right, and maybe your intuition says, you know what, I'm going back inside the building and I'm going to walk out with someone. Intuition is good because it could save your life. But intuition can also kill you. You're probably saying, how could intuition kill you? Well, it can kill you if your intuition leads you to the wrong action. Let me give you an example. I'm a pilot. I love flying airplanes. It's a really cool thing to do. Intuition doesn't have a whole lot of place in flying. Sometimes it does. Like, your intuition is really good if it says that you ought to check something, or you need to make a precautionary landing to have the airplane checked out, or maybe your intuition is telling you that your skills aren't up to snuff that particular day. But realistically, intuition kills a lot of pilots every year. Pretty scary, huh? But it happens. So let me explain to you how it happens. One of the first things that pilots learn when they're learning how to fly is they learn how to use the yoke or the stick, what that does. And you've seen people pulling back and pushing up on it if you've ever been in an airplane. So what they learn is that if the airplane has sufficient power and the pilot pulls back on the yoke or the stick, it raises the nose and the airplane will climb. It's a beautiful thing. I mean, believe me, when a plane climbs, it's awesome. If you push forward on the stick, it lowers the nose and the airplane will descend. It's that simple, and it becomes intuitive to the pilot very, very, very fast, very quickly. Now, here's where pilots get into trouble. Pilots get into trouble when things don't go as planned or when there's an emergency, kind of like salespeople, you know, when things don't go as planned. But for a pilot, let's say a pilot is flying close to the ground and has an engine failure. Okay, so without power, remember, the airplane is a glider. I mean, and a glider, unless it has some type of a lifting force, such as thermals or being towed by another airplane, is going to descend. So when an airplane loses power, it's going down. Now, here's what happens. If you lower the nose slightly to maintain airspeed, in other words, you force a descent and you maintain sufficient airflow over the wing, then the pilot is able to bring the airplane to the ground under control. That's what you want. You want to keep it under control. But here's where pilots get into trouble, though. This is when their intuition takes over instead of thinking. What do you think a pilot's intuition is if the airplane is low to the ground? Let's say you're taking off or landing and you have an engine failure. And all of a sudden now the airplane is descending and you see the ground rushing up at you. What do you think the pilot's intuition is? The natural intuition is to get away from the ground by pulling back on the yoke. That's what you want to do. Now, I know it sounds crazy that if you're in an airplane, you want to get away from the ground because so many of you don't like flying, you don't want to get off the ground. But believe me, when you're in an airplane, unless there's a runway underneath you, you want to stay away from the ground. That's generally a good rule. So, but this is what pilots do. If you don't have sufficient power, you see the ground rushing up, you pull back on the stick, and you raise the nose because you want to climb, but there's no power to allow you to climb. So what happens? The airspeed decreases, the airflow over the wing decreases, you lose lift, and the airplane essentially stops flying. That's called a stall, and it just drops. It just falls. Not a good situation. So what a pilot must do is has to keep the airplane under control, and in order to do that, the pilot must prevent a stall. That means keeping the nose pointed down in the direction that the pilot does not want to go. In other words, the pilot wants to get away from the ground and intuitively wants to pull the yoke away from the ground, but that's the wrong thing to do. The pilot actually needs to keep the nose of the airplane pointed towards the ground to maintain flying speed. That move, moving the stick forward when the ground's coming up at you, is counterintuitive, but it will save your life. Intuition says to pull back on the stick. Knowledge or understanding aerodynamics says that you have to move the stick forward, because if you don't, it will kill you and your passengers. So how do you do this? How do you override intuition and avoid the deadly scenario I just described? There's only one way to do it, and that is training. Now, you might be thinking, well, Mace, that's pretty interesting, very, very fascinating about how pilots get killed, but I don't fly airplanes. I sell medical devices. I sell life science products. What does that have to do with me? Well, I use that as an example to personify how intuition can work against you. So let's talk about intuition in sales. There is a word that you can use to describe the vast majority of medical sales representatives who sell by intuition. Do you know what that word is? It's average. You see, their intuition might serve them well part of the time, but very often it's counterproductive. Here's why. The problem with intuition in sales is that most salespeople's intuition is telling them to do the same thing that every other sales rep is doing. And I think you might agree that is a poor way to differentiate your product and yourself. The only way to overcome the intuition that holds back sales performance is through training. Same as in an airplane, it applies in sales. Yet, the vast majority of medical salespeople I have met in more than 30 years of doing this, 30 years in this industry, they resist training. Why? Why would a salesperson resist training? Guess what the answer is? Intuition. Boom! The same thing. Their intuition tells them that they don't need training because they think they know what to do. You see how intuition can create this cascade of problems, of poor performance? You see, too often, medical sales reps find themselves in situations where the ground is rushing up at them, and their intuition causes them to do the wrong thing. And what do? Same thing that happens to a pilot in the airplane. They crash. So let's talk about seeking help. And this isn't a sales pitch here. I'm going to share a story with you. I'm going to get a little personal here, and I don't always like doing it, but I'm feeling a little vulnerable tonight, and I'm going to open up myself to you just to exemplify what it is I'm talking about. You see, like most medical sales representatives, I resisted coaching and training for years. And you know why? Well, number one, I had a strong academic background in anatomy, physiology, pathology. I thought I could outsell my competition just with that. And it took me a while to learn that my medical knowledge was useful, but it meant little when compared to the effective selling skills and strategies that medical sales professionals use. I mean, the real pros, the guys who go out there and take business away from their competition. Now, once I learned the benefits of countering intuitive sales behavior that I was very guilty of, I became a fan of training pretty much forever. You know, training makes all the difference in the world. It's one of the reasons I do what I do, by the way. Now, this revelation occurred when I sought help to capitalize on a rare opportunity in my territory. Here's what was happening. The orthopedic implant business, one of my accounts, it was up for grabs, and there was one of my competitors who owned this business, and he owned it for years. I mean, he just had all of the business in the account. Interestingly, I'm talking about orthopedic implants, and interestingly, his company charged more for implants than the five other companies who responded to a request for a proposal. They were charging more. And the hospital's goal was to get all of the orthopedic surgeons on staff to switch to a lower-priced implant system. You may have experienced that. If you sell in the orthopedic industry, I assure you, you've experienced that. And if you haven't, it means you're probably very new, but trust me, you will. So here's what happened. The hospital invited all the reps from all six of these orthopedic implant companies to present to the surgeons. Now, my intuition was telling me to give the same sales presentation that I always gave, because I thought it was great. You know, I gave a great sales presentation. You know, I had all of this knowledge and everything. But then it occurred to me, my five competitors, they were going to be doing essentially the same thing. And that wasn't good. I knew I had to stand out. I had to differentiate myself. And guess how much business there was on the line? There was over $1 million worth of business. That's a lot of business. So I pushed my ego aside. It wasn't easy, but I managed to, I had to push with both hands and both feet actually. And I sought help. So what I did was I called this guy, Ned. He was a sales trainer who spoke at one of the national sales meetings for the company I was working out. And I described the scenario to him. I said, Ned, look, there's going to be 10 orthopedic surgeons sitting in a room. I need to give them a reason to switch to my system. Here's the truth. My hip and knee system, they're not all that different from what the surgeons are already using. Our price might be a little lower and I could get it a little lower, but you know, I'm sure all of the other companies who are under consideration, they're going to lower their price also because they know that that's kind of the key thing for the hospital. They needed to lower the price. So Nat asked me, he says, all right, so Mace, you know, what's your plan? You know, what's the strategy? How are you going to do this? And without hesitating, I responded, you know what, Ned? I'm going to go in there and show them how the science behind our implants makes it a superior system. I'm going to discuss the nuances that my competitors don't have or are incapable of discussing. And I said that very confidently because I was the science guy, right? I mean, I had all of that background in anatomy, physiology, and I felt that I could explain this better than anyone. You see, my intuition was telling me that science was important to surgeons. That's what my intuition was telling me. Ned's next question made me rethink that. He said, Mace, how successful have you been selling science to these surgeons in the past? He says, is that what you always do? I go, yeah, yeah. He said, so how well is that working with this group of surgeons? And you know, I had to answer, I guess, well, you know, not very well. You know, although whenever I talked to them, they did acknowledge that the science made sense. I mean, science is science. Doctors are men and women of science, so they can't really dispute it. But yet it didn't motivate them to buy. And he said that. He said, but, it, you know, it didn't get them to use your system, did it? And I said, no. So Ned then offered the advice that I needed to hear. And he said, Mace, if you're one of six sales reps giving a sales pitch to a group of surgeons within a few hours, you better sound different. In fact, you better sound way different than any of your competitors. Mace, let me ask you a question. What do these guys really want? You know, what do these surgeons really want? And I was quiet. I thought for a second. And then I answered, you know what they want? They want the hospital to leave them the hell alone and allow them to use whatever system they want to use. So Ned summed it up. He said, Mace, consider what the surgeons are thinking when you're in that room. And then talk about that. Don't talk about what you want to talk about. Talk about what they're thinking about. Because when you do that, you'll get their attention. And at the very least, you'll differentiate yourself from the herd. Now, we can be very honest. Sometimes it's good to differentiate yourself if you differentiate yourself in a good way. If you differentiate yourself in a bad way, not so good. But anyway, Ned and I spent the next few hours discussing several strategies, and he had me practice exactly what I would say in different situations. You know, he varied the scenario, you know, all right, so what if this happens? Or what if the, you know, one of the, you know, the other reps says this? And, you know, we kept focus on the long-term outcomes that I thought the surgeons were after and not just this particular event. You see, he taught me to think long-term, think about everything they want, not just this one thing. And that's great advice for all of us. So here's what happens. I arrive at the hospital meeting and all of the reps in attendance were shocked to learn. When we heard this announcement, we're all shocked to learn that we're all going to be in the same room for the duration and we were going to hear each other's presentations. I mean, think about that. You know, you're in a competitive situation and your competition is there. They're going to hear everything that you're going to say to try and persuade a surgeon to use your system. And one of the reps protested, and the head of the committee who was running the show, he just said, listen, you don't have to be present in front of your competition if you don't want. All you need to do is withdraw your company from consideration. Well, that guy shut up, and the rest of us who were thinking about saying something, we just didn't say anything. So yeah, I mean, it was uncomfortable. And I became even more uncomfortable when we drew numbers from a hat for the presentation order, and I drew number 6. I was to go last. Now, sometimes that's a good thing to go last, because the last person to speak is usually the last person to be remembered. But I'm talking to a group of orthopedic surgeons. It's starting at about, you know, 6-7 o'clock at night, and this was going to be going on for a while. These guys are tired. They've been operating, seeing patients all day, and they have to listen to 5 presentations before mine. And all I'm thinking is, this is great. They're not even going to listen. They're not going to hear a damn word I'm going to say. So this 2-hour horror show began, and half the reps have full-blown PowerPoint presentations. Now, does the phrase death by PowerPoint mean anything to you? All I'm thinking about is everything that my competitors are doing. You know, it's killing these guys. It's just making them less and less likely to want to hear what I'm going to say. And the reality is, everybody sounded alike. They're all using the same terms, like state of the art. You know, my system is state of the art. The instrumentation is state of the art. And doctor, this will produce the best outcomes, the best possible outcomes. Have you ever used those terms? Well, guess what? Your competition is using those terms also. So, I mean, it seemed to be, you know, there seemed to be some engagement from the surgeons. They're asking questions, and they seemed to be paying attention during the first 3 presentations. But by the 4th presentation, they're looking at their watches. They're looking at their shoes. Some guys, their eyes are closing, and they're doing that, you know, that head nod where the head drops, and then, you know, they suddenly wake up. And I'm watching this because I'm going last. They just want this dog and pony show to be over. So I got to listen to all the other presentations, and now everybody's eyes are on me. It is my turn. And the only chance that I'm going to have to make an impression, again, is to be different. You know, and I got to be dramatically different because these guys are falling asleep. So I'm thinking, you know, what's the elephant in the room? You know, again, what do these guys really want, and what have they been putting up with? So I opened my presentation. I said, doctors, thank you for being here. You've just endured over 90 minutes of presentations that I'm willing to bet have not changed your thinking about the system you want to use one bit, nor should it. You're the surgeon. You're the one that has the knowledge, skills, and experience to make these decisions, not the hospital. Now, what did I just do? I just called out what every one of them was thinking. They didn't want to be there. They didn't want to be told by the hospital what to do. I just acknowledged that. Hospital wasn't too happy with me, but at this particular time, the surgeons were making the decision, not the hospital. The hospital was only concerned about price. When I said that, I got the absolute attention of every person in the room, including the evil eye of the committee chairman, who looked at me with disbelief. So I continued. And I said, listen, doctors, I could waste your time by talking about my system, but I'm not going to insult your intelligence. Something else that they were thinking about what all the other reps were trying to teach them with science and everything else. And I continued. I said, listen, if you like what you've heard about one of the systems presented here today, go ahead and vote. But if you'd like to know how some of your colleagues are overcoming many of the key intraoperative challenges you face and how this is enabling them to attract patients from other surgeons' practices, including yours, by the way, let me visit with you for 15 minutes in your office this week. I can't tell you which system is best for your patients, and the hospital shouldn't do that either, but I can provide verifiable data that will support your decision, whatever it is, whatever system you want to use. I'm willing to help you with that. Are you all good with that? I received a round of applause from the surgeons, and truthfully, it was probably more for ending their suffering by being short than it was for anything that I really said. But in the coming days, when I called on the surgeons and I got to speak with them, many of them acknowledged that I had done the right thing by not trying to be like everybody else. Now, you're probably wondering, did I get the business? Well, sadly, no, I didn't. The company, who had almost all of the business to start with, they got to retain it, albeit at a much lower price. They just went in there and just lowered the price. That's what they did. Again, if you listen to my content, I tell you that lowering your price continuously is not a sustainable method for selling, but this company did that and they got to hold on to their business. So what did I get out of my counterintuitive non-presentation? Because it really wasn't a presentation. I went in there and just called out what the doctors were thinking. Well, what I got was respect and open doors. You see, I had unlimited access to all of the surgeons in that room from that point forward because they knew I wouldn't waste their time. And I didn't bore them with all kinds of crap like every other sales rep who came into their office and droned on endlessly about their products. Are you paying attention to what I'm saying here? Over time, this allowed me to steal significant chunks of business from my competition, and that was pretty cool. So let's analyze here. My intuition said to do what every other rep did, who, by the way, were also acting on intuition. Yet, a medical sales trainer named Ned showed me how dangerous intuition could be, including the intuition that led me to assume that I was already good and didn't need additional sales training or coaching. And I got to tell you, from this point forward, I invested in every type of training that was adaptable to medical sales. You see, that's the reality. Most medical sales representatives sell intuitively, which makes it very difficult for them to distinguish themselves and their products from their competition. Sameness is the kiss of death in medical sales, and the only way to overcome the intuitive response that creates this sameness is with effective training. If you don't do that, what's going to happen is you're going to be pulling back on the yoke when you should be pushing forward. And if that causes you to crash, it's all over. And a lot of times you don't survive and you can't recover. So if you're not investing time and money to update and maintain your medical sales skills on a continual basis, then the reality is average is about the best you can hope for. And the best way to evaluate this is by looking at what you're doing now. Are you growing at the rate you want to be growing? Are you being able to engage your customers as frequently, as often as you would like to engage them? Because if not, you might want to look at new ways of doing what I just described. Now, of course, this is a nice lead-in to one of the things that I offer, Medical Sales Academy. And in Medical Sales Academy, you'll learn all kinds of things. You will learn how to differentiate yourself, how to have conversations unlike your competition is having with them. You'll be able to position products in ways that your competition hasn't even dreamed of positioning. And that's going to make a huge impact. Now, this might not be for you, and you might feel like it's not for you. And if not, that's fine. Find other ways to differentiate yourself, be different, be boldly different, and engage your customers any way you can. But if you want some help with that, I suggest you check out Medical Sales Academy because that's what it's all about. And you could learn more about Medical Sales Academy by going to medicalsalesacademy.com. How easy is that? I'd like to thank you for spending some time with me on this edition of the Medical Sales Guru podcast. I hope it was beneficial to you. I hope you get something out of it. Again, let me remind you that the only way you will get something out of it is if you think differently and take action differently and actually make a concerted effort to elevate your skills and what you do for the customers in your territory. And when we're talking about the customers in your territory, don't forget about the ultimate customer or the ultimate beneficiary of what you do, and that is the patient. Ladies and gentlemen, the patient always comes first. You are blessed to do what you do in this wonderful industry. Do what you can to make a difference. I look forward to speaking to you again next week on the Medical Sales Guru podcast when we'll discuss something else that's important to you in your medical sales career. Until then, this is Mace Hara for the Medical Sales Guru podcast. Bye for now.